Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. The topic today is exploring how outstanding senior government executives make tough decisions. Our guest is Ron Sanders of Booz Allen Hamilton, who is the co-author of a recent exploratory study on that subject. Here's a clip.
The outstanding executives had a vocabulary of action. They use words like decisive, initiative, action, decision. There's a whole long list of words that we would put under the broad heading of action-oriented. And that was a fairly significant difference from the executives in the comparison group.
What skills or characteristics do public leaders need in order to make tough decisions? That question is the focus of a study published as a Harvard Kennedy School working paper titled, I Won't Back Down, Complexity and Courage in U.S. Federal Executive Decision-Making. Its co-authors include Steve Kelman of the Kennedy School and our guest today, Ron Sanders, a vice president of the management consulting firm Booz Allen Hamilton. Ron joined the firm after 37 years of federal service, 20 years of which were in senior executive positions, including associate director of national intelligence. I'm glad to have him with us by phone today. Ron, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andy.
Start us off by telling us more about the goal of the study and the research design.
Well, we wanted to study the way senior federal executives, in this case sub-cabinet officials, made critical decisions. We wanted to see if there are differences between those executives who had the reputation for being outstanding and those who were more of a comparison group, just sort of randomly selected. We went out to various groups like the National Academy of Public Administration, GAO, OMB, et cetera, to identify outstanding sub-cabinet officials. We asked them to actually nominate people. And then we drew a control group right out of the plum book. And then, Andy, we proceeded to conduct exhaustive interviews with the 20 executives, 10 outstanding, 10 control, the 20 executives that we ultimately identified. No less than 2 hours, in some cases as much as six. All of those interviews taped and transcribed, analyzed, with sophisticated content analysis software, and then eyeballed by humans.
Before we talk about the findings, Ron, I think it's worth reminding our listeners that this is exploratory research. As you said, it's a small sample, but in-depth qualitative analysis. Exploratory research can be really useful for forming hypotheses that can then be tested on a larger scale through more research in the future.
That's fair. We deliberately sacrificed breadth. We didn't do this by survey. We wanted depth. We wanted literally individual personal case studies from these executives. We wanted them to describe their behaviors, who they talked to, what they did, what they were feeling. So again, it was quite exhaustive and in some cases exhausting.
And tell us next, what were your main findings?
Andy, we were surprised by what we found. We actually set out to test whether outstanding federal executives used a technique called vigilant decision-making in making critical decisions. Vigilant decision-making sounds fancy, but it's pretty straightforward. It says that before an executive makes a tough call, they talk to a lot of people. They get diverse opinions. They encourage dissent. They withhold their own judgment until the end as a way of overcoming individual biases and, on the other hand, groupthink. And we thought that outstanding executives would exhibit this vigilant approach more than the comparison group. And we found something that surprised us. When we asked all 20 executives, tell us about your most difficult, most wrenching decision, first of all, they described decisions that were not especially complex. And of course, this vigilant process is tailor-made for complex technical decisions. We thought that's what they would describe. They did not. Instead, 14 out of the 20, 9 of the 10 outstanding and 5 of the 10 comparison group described decisions that were gut-wrenching, moral, ethical, do-the-right-thing kinds of decisions, decisions that required courage. And in fact, when they made them, they didn't talk to a lot of people. They talked to a few trusted advisors, but mainly they looked inside themselves. These were tough calls. The calls were going to make people mad, unhappy, going against OMB, going against GAO, going against the Hill Committee. They knew they would be unpopular, but they knew what the right thing to do was. And so instead of having this vigilant sort of group effort to sort through the complexity, they said, this isn't complex. This is doing the right thing. And they made those decisions based on introspection and self-reflection.
The toughest decisions, in other words, required courage and not just dealing with complexity.
Right. In every case, although the circumstances differed, firing somebody, major reorganization, cutting programs, the circumstances differed. In every case, the decision was going against the grain. Popular opinion, the opinion of their advisors and the opinion of their bosses all said, do one thing. And they just didn't want to do that one thing. It wasn't the right thing to do. It required some character. And so they went the other way. So you can characterize these courageous decisions as organizationally and politically unpopular. You really can't say whether they're right or wrong because, you know, cutting a program, it's a judgment call. Terminating somebody, it's a judgment call. But they slept easy at night because they felt they had done the right thing.
One of your conclusions is that successful agency executives need to be what you call ambidextrous, meaning knowing how to deal with complex decisions on the one hand, but also knowing how to deal with decisions that require some courage. Tell us more about that.
Well, think of this as a contingency theory for a decision maker. For those decisions that are technically complex, where there is a technical answer, but it may be hard to find, this notion of vigilant decision making, bringing in a large group, bringing in a diverse group, encouraging dissenting opinions, withholding your judgment, et cetera, those are, you know, as I said, those are tailor-made for complex decisions. But there is a point, though, in the process of making a decision where, in some cases, the executive is going to say, wait a minute, this is not technical. This is not, while there may be complexity here at the end of the day, all of the discussion in the world, all of the calculation and analysis in the world isn't going to tell me the answer. This is, do I do the right thing? And that's where the ambidexterity comes into play. For the decision maker then to stop the group process, this vigilant process, and look inward. And by inward, we don't just mean self-reflection. In many cases, the executive reached to a very small group of trusted advisors, but it's sort of the opposite of this vigilant process, to look inside. And that's how they made their decisions. And so what we're suggesting is when an executive reaches that point, feels that he or she has gone past the complexity, this is that courage and character, to throw the group out of the room. That's where the I won't back down title comes from. You don't want the group there continuing to say, wait a minute, don't go there, that's going to make people mad. You want either your own conscience or your trusted advisors to say, do the right thing, we will support you. You won't back down, don't back down, I won't back down. That's the courage part. And again, it's a completely different way of approaching the decision from ones that involve complexity.
Another one of your conclusions was that outstanding executives had what you called a bias for action. Tell us what you mean.
We had thousands of pages of transcripts, and in analyzing the content of those transcripts, one thing became evident. The outstanding executives had a vocabulary of action. They used words like decisive, initiative, action, decision. There's a whole long list of words that we would put under the broad heading of action-oriented. And that was a fairly significant difference from the executives in the comparison group. Now, again, this is a sample of 20. We are not making any sort of sweeping statistical inferences here. But clearly, that's the way they thought. They thought in terms of taking action, making decisions, moving forward, and it was part of their psyche.
Ron, as you know, this podcast focuses a lot on analytical tools, and obviously those are very important to public leaders. Your research, though, is a reminder that there can be diminishing returns to analysis, and in other words, there can be costs for not making a decision.
Right. Well, and you know, Andy, we've all worked for people who won't make a decision. They keep, you know, and paralysis by analysis. We've heard that, and I think that's the pathological side of the vigilant decision-making.
I have one more question for you, Ron, which is, you had a terrific and extensive career in the public sector. Do these findings ring true to your own experience?
I will tell you that this really resonated with me because, you know, in the heat of battle, you may make those decisions, but you, and while you may reflect on them, you don't really reflect on how you made them. And as we were going through the research, I was able to remember maybe 6 or 8 or 10 what I would call defining moments in my career as a leader where I did similar things, where I went against the grain, in some cases under threat of my job. And I suspect many, if not most, career executives would relate to that. Everybody's faced with that at some point in their career.
My thanks to Ron Sanders for being with us. I'll post a link to the working paper on the blog. Ron, congratulations to you and your co-authors for a thought-provoking and really useful piece of research into an extremely important topic, which is effective leadership. Thanks for giving us an overview.
Oh, Andy, it was my pleasure. This was a really fun project to work on, and we hope the results are not only important for researchers, but resonate with practitioners who've been there and done that.